Chapter 16. December came to the Four Corners, but winter lingered up in the Utah mountains. It had buried the Wasatch Range under 3 feet and ventured far enough south to give Colorado's San Juans a snowcap. But the brief post-Halloween storm that had whitened the slopes of Shiprock and the Chuscas proved to be a false threat. It was dry again across the Navajo Nation, skies dark blue, mornings cool, sun dazzling. The south end of the Colorado Plateau was enjoying that typically beautiful autumn weather that makes the inevitable first blizzard such a dangerous surprise. Beautiful or not, Jim Chee was keeping himself far too busy to enjoy it, even if his glum mood would have allowed it. He had learned that he could handle administrative duties if he tried hard enough, and that he would never, ever enjoy them. For the first time in his life, he felt no sense of pleasure as he went to work. But the work got done. He made progress. The vacation schedules were established in a way that produced no serious discontent among the officers who worked with him. A system had been devised whereby whatever policemen who happened to be in the Hogback neighborhood would drop in on Diamante's establishment for a friendly chat. This happened several times a week, thus keeping Diamante careful and his customers uneasy without giving him any solid grounds for complaint. As a byproduct, it had also produced a couple of arrests of young fellows who had been ignoring fugitive warrants. On top of that, his budget for next year was about half finished, and a plan had been drafted for keeping better track of gasoline usage and patrol car maintenance. This had produced an unusual, indeed unprecedented in the experience of acting Lieutenant Jim Chee, smile on the face of Captain Largo. Even Officer Bernadette Manuelito seemed to be responding to this new efficiency in Chee's criminal investigation domain. This came about after the word reached the ear of Captain Largo, and very shortly thereafter the ear of Acting Lieutenant Chee, that Mr. Finch had nailed a pair of cattle-stealing brothers so thoroughly that they had actually admitted not just rustling 5 unweaned calves, but also about 6 or 7 other such larcenies from the New Mexico side of Chee's jurisdiction. So overwhelming was the evidence, the captain said, that they had plea-bargained themselves into jail at Aztec. Well, good, Chee had said. Well, goddammit, Largo replied. Why can't we nail some of those bastards ourselves? Largo's imperial we had actually meant him, Chee realized. He also realized, before this uncomfortable conversation ended, that Finch had revealed to Largo not only Chee's ignorance of heifer curiosity, but how he and Officer Manuelito had screwed up Finch's trap out by Shiprock. Chee had walked down the hall, away from this meeting, with several resolutions strongly formed. He would catch Finch's favorite cow thief before Finch could get his hands on him. Having beaten Finch at Finch's game, he would resign his role as acting lieutenant and go back to being a real policeman. There would be no more trying to be a bureaucrat to impress Janet. And to accomplish the first phase of this program, he would shift Manuelito over to work on rustler cases, she and Largo being the only ones in the Shiprock District who took it seriously. Officer Bernadette Manuelito responded to this shift in duties by withdrawing her request for a transfer. At least, that was Jim Chee's presumption. Jennifer had another notion. She had noticed that the frequent calls between the lady lawyer in Window Rock and the acting lieutenant in Shiprock had abruptly ceased. Jennifer was very good at keeping the Shiprock District Criminal Investigation Office running smoothly because she made it her business to know what the hell was going on. She made a couple of calls to old friends in the small world of law enforcement down at Window Rock. Yes, indeed, the pretty lawyer had been observed shedding tears while in conversation with a lady friend in her car. She had also been seen having dinner at the Navajo Inn with that good-looking lawyer from Washington. Things, it seemed, were in flux. Having learned this, it was Jennifer's theory that Officer Manuelito would learn of it too. Not as directly, perhaps, or as fast, but she would learn of it. Whatever her motives, Manuelito seemed to like her new duties. She stood in front of Chee's desk, looking excited, but not about rustling.
"That's what I said," she said. "They showed up at old Mr. Merryboy's place last night. They told him they wanted trespass permission on his grazing lease. They wanted to climb Shiprock."
"And it was George Shaw and John McDermott?" Chee said.
"Yes, sir," Officer Manuelito said. "That's what they told him. They paid him $100 and said if they did any damage, they'd pay him for that."
"My God," Chee said. "You mean those two lawyers are going to climb Shiprock?"
"Old man Merryboy said the little one had climbed it before, years ago. He said most of the white people just sneaked in and climbed it, but George Shaw had come to his house to get permission. He remembered that, how polite Shaw had been. But this time Shaw said they were bringing a team of climbers."
"So the tall one with the mustache probably isn't going up," Chee said, wondering if he sounded disappointed. But should he be disappointed? Would having McDermott fall off a cliff solve his problem with Janet? He didn't think so. "They didn't say why they were going up there, I guess," Chee said.
"No, sir, I asked him about that. Mr. Merryboy said they didn't tell him why."
She laughed, showing very pretty white teeth.
"He said, why do white men do anything? He said he knew a white fellow once who was trying to get a patent on a cordless bungee jumper."
Chee rewarded that with a chuckle. The way he'd heard it, it was a stringless yo-yo. But Merryboy had revised it to fit mountain climbers.
"But what I wanted to tell you about was business," Officer Manuelito said. "Mr. Merryboy told me he was missing four steers."
"Merryboy," Chee said. "Let's see, he has..."
"Yes, sir," she said. "That's his lease where we found the loose fence posts, where somebody was throwing the hay over the fence. I went by his place to tell him about that. I was going to give him a notebook and ask him to keep track of strange trucks and trailers. He said I was a little late, but he took the notebook and said he'd help."
"Did he say how late?"
Merryboy hadn't reported a cattle theft. Chee was sure of that. He checked on everything involving rustling every day.
"Did he say why he hadn't reported the loss?"
"He said he missed them sometime last spring. He was selling off steers and came up short. And he said he didn't report it because he didn't think it would do any good. He said when it happened before, a couple of times, he went in and told us about it, but he never did get his animals back."
That was one of the frustrations Chee had been learning to live with in dealing with rustling. People didn't keep track of their cattle. They turned them out to graze, and if they had a big grazing lease and reliable water, maybe they'd only see them three or four times a year. Maybe only at calving time and branding time. And if you did see them, maybe you wouldn't notice if you were short a couple. Chee had spent his boyhood with sheep. He could tell an Angus from a Hereford, but beyond that, one cow looked a lot like every other cow. He could understand how you wouldn't miss a couple, and if you did, what could you do about it? Maybe the coyotes had got him, or maybe it was the little green men coming down in flying saucers. Whatever, you weren't going to get him back. "So we put an X on our map and mark it unreported," Chee said, "which doesn't help much."
"It might," Officer Manuelito said, "later on."
Chee was extracting their map from his desk drawer. He kept it out of sight on the theory that everyone in the office except Manuelito would think this project was silly. Or worse, they would think he was trying to copy Joe Leaphorn's famous map. Everybody in the tribal police seemed to know about that and the legendary lieutenant's use of it to exercise his theory that everything fell into a pattern, every effect had its cause, and so forth. The map was a U.S. Geological Survey quadrangle chart large enough in scale to show every arroyo, hogan, windmill, and culvert. Chee pushed his in-basket aside, rolled it out, and penned a tiny blue question mark on the Merryboy grazing lease with a tiny 3 beside it. Beside that, he marked in the date the loss had been discovered. Officer Manuelito looked at it and said,
"A blue 3?
"Signifies unreported possible thefts," Chee said. "Three of them." He waved his hand around the map, indicating a scattering of such designations. "I've been adding them as we learn about them."
"Good idea," Manuelito said. "And add an X there, too. Merryboy is going to be a lookout for us."
She pulled up a chair, sat,
leaned her elbows on the desk and studied the chart. She added the X. The map now had maybe a score of those, each marking the home of a volunteer equipped with a notebook and ballpoint pen. She had bought the supplies with his own money, preferring that to trying to explain the system to Largo. If it worked, which today didn't seem likely to Chi, he would decide whether to ask for a reimbursement of his $27 outlay.
"Funny how this is already working out," Manuelito said. "I thought it would take months."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean the patterns you talked about," she said. "How those single animal thefts tend to fall around the middle of the month."
Chi looked. Indeed, most of the ones that marked single theft sites were followed by mid-month dates, and a high percentage of those mid-month dates were clustered along the reservation border. But what did that signify? He said, "Yeah."
"I don't think we should concentrate on those," she said, still staring thoughtfully at the map. "But if you want me to, I could check with the bars and liquor stores around Farmington and try to work up a list of guys who come in about the middle of the month with a fresh supply of money."
She shook her head. "It wouldn't prove anything, but it would give us a list of people to look out for." About halfway through this monologue, Chi's brain caught up with Manuelito's thinking. The Navajo Nation relief checks arrived about the first of the month. Every reservation cop knew that the heavy workload produced by the need to arrest drunks tended to ease off in the second week when the liquor addicts had used up their cash. He visualized a dried-out drunk driving past a pasture and seeing a $500 cow staring through the fence at him. How could the man resist? And why hadn't he thought of that? He thought of it now. Weeks compiling the list, weeks spent cross-checking, sorting, coming up finally with four or five cases, getting maybe two convictions resulting in $100 fines, which would be suspended, and 30-day sentences, which would be converted to probation. Meanwhile, serious crime would continue to flourish. "I think instead we'll sort those out and set them aside. Let's concentrate on solving the multiple thefts," Chi said.
"There's a pattern there, too, I think," Officer Manuelito said. "Am I right?"
She had noticed this one himself. The multiple thefts tended to show up in empty country, from grazing leases like Mary Boy's, where the owner might not see his herd for a month or so. They talked about that, which led them back to their growing list of rustler watchers, which led them back to Lucy Sam.
"You look through her telescope," Manuelito said. "Did you notice she could see that place where the fence posts were loose?"
Chi shook his head. He had been looking at the mountain, thinking of the fallen man stranded on the cliff up there calling for help.
"You could," Manuelito said. "I looked."
"I think I should go talk to her," Chi said. But he wasn't thinking of rustling when he said it. He was wondering what Lucy Sam's father might have seen all those years ago when Hal Breedlove had huddled on that little shelf, waiting to die.